This is our second special episode on the Best of Women's Fiction series. Have you ever wondered what it takes to perform an audiobook, or how narrators choose which books to work on? With the audiobook for my own novel, The Exit Strategy, releasing now in April, I decided to invite my narrator, Susan Marlowe, to join me and enlighten us on how all of that works. Throughout the episode, I'll pull some examples from my own audiobook to demonstrate Susan's key points, which also means you'll get a sneak peek of the audiobook that just released. If you're a writer listening to this, you may be intrigued by the storytelling comparisons between writing and performing narration. First, a little about Susan Marlowe. Susan has narrated over 150 books, a great many of them women's fiction, mystery, and suspense. When not in her studio, she can be found performing in community theater, belting out show tunes in her car, and hanging out with her husband, two sons, and cats. Thanks for joining me, Susan.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with just the beginning of, like, can you tell me a little bit about your background? How did you get into narrating audiobooks?
So I come from an acting background. I mean, I was doing it more recreationally, but I've been acting since, you know, my middle school days. And I just decided several years ago that I really wanted to work from home. And I was looking for career opportunities to do that. And have been wanting to do voice work for a long time. And so I put something out in social media, kind of picked people's brains, went on the internet, and somehow I stumbled upon an article that led me to ACX, which is the big audiobook hub for specifically independent authors and independent narrators. And I just kind of dug right in, maybe before I should have, when I was still learning the craft, but just went in headfirst and loved it and have just kept up, you know, doing it. That was in 2015. And I think I'm somewhere now around like about 150 books, give or take. I've kind of lost track because I go with different distribution services and publishers, so I don't know exactly the number, but.
And to give people who are listening a sense, I think I had like 50 auditions on ACX. ACX belongs to Amazon. I think it stands for Amazon Audible Exchange, something like that. So it's their way of producing and distributing audiobooks. And I actually went a slightly different path in the end. I went with Findaway, which is another way to distribute your audiobooks, which opens up a few other channels other than ACX. But I had about 50 auditions. And this auditioning process is interesting. People read or they perform a piece of your book that you've given them. And I chose Susan both based on her audition, but also a referral from a friend who was just so pleased with working with you and said you were such a professional, which I can validate you have been. It's been an amazing process. And so you're down selling yourself here because you're really among the best out there.
Thank you. That's so nice.
Well, this is Lainey, and I'm learning too. I was close, but not quite on track with my explanation of ACX. It actually stands for Audiobook Creation Exchange, but it does indeed belong to Amazon. And while I'm breaking in here, why don't we listen to a sample of Susan narrating the opening page of The Exit Strategy.
Chapter 1. Rin scrawled seething on a scrap of paper and crammed it into the feelings jar on her desk. She winced at the glare bouncing off the adjacent skyscrapers, streaming through the wall of windows into her office. The San Francisco weather gods apparently didn't get the memo. Dismal fog was the appropriate backdrop to discovering her husband's affair, not sparkly damn sunshine. She opened her valuation spreadsheet. Perhaps a focus on the data would calm the shitstorm rumbling inside her head. Pop's technique of stuffing unwanted emotions in a jar usually worked, but not this morning, and the meeting with BioLarge started in 10 minutes. The promotion she'd been denied for 2 years depended on closing this deal. She refused to blow it because of an infidelity brain scramble.
So let's hear some more from Susan. Next, she shares what her recording setup looks like, which includes how useful a heavy blanket can be, followed by how she chooses which books to audition for, among all the different choices that come her way. So let's talk about how you got into this a little bit more. Like, now that you're doing it, you've been doing it for a while, like, what, tell me a little bit about, like, what kind of setup do you have at home? Do you have a full studio, or have you kind of jimmied it together? Like, what does that look like?
It's a little bit of both. I don't have a booth just yet. They are super expensive, and I've kind of been putting that off. So in terms of soundproofing and sound absorption, I have these really, this blanket here, it was actually a quilt I got at IKEA years ago, but it's so heavy. And behind it, there's actual soundproofing blankets that I bought. And I'm just kind of in a corner of my room, and I have some acoustic foam facing me. And it's worked pretty well. You know, if somebody's outside mowing the lawn or shoveling, you know, that I can't help. I have to stop and wait for that to stop. But little noises around the house or the neighbors, I don't pick up, which is good. And then my microphone, I, you know, have been consistently upgrading. So I'm working with a Rode NT1. I don't know if that means anything to anyone, but I've been getting pretty decent sound with that, and I'm really happy with it. And I have a studio monitor set up. So I started with headphones, but I found that I was getting like too much into the technical part with the headphones. I was hearing every little mouth noise, and it was just affecting my performance. So this is better for me to just go with the, I just free, you know, free talk in here.
And how do you decide which books to audition for, right? Like, you actually see a lot of books on ACX, and you can choose which ones to put in an audition for. Like, what influences you when you're choosing which books you might be interested in working on?
I mean, there's basically, you know, two layers to it. So creatively, I'm going to look for things that are a good fit for me. My voice tends to be, it's lower, it's, I could do young characters, but they have to be kind of angsty or like, you know, like the badass teenagers. I'm not going to be doing any kind of like young ingenue characters, not for main characters, at least. I could kind of pull that off for secondary characters. So I look and make sure it's a good fit creatively. And then financially, because it's my livelihood, there's two ways to get paid. And this is important for authors when you're putting your book out there. You could either share royalties, or you could pay your narrator upfront and then you collect all the royalties. So when I look at royalty share books, I'm really looking at how well I think the book will sell, how marketable it is, the author's online presence, you know, do they have a lot of followers, do they put out a lot of content, etc.
So what do you enjoy about your role, and what's the hardest part of narrating?
What I enjoy most as an actor and as a writer, I'm sure, you know, this will speak to you as well, is just, it's our job to storytell, right? So you're creating a story and I'm presenting the story. And, you know, I've worked as an actor on stage. I've worked as an actor behind the mic. I've worked as a director. I've written before. I've done like some playwriting. So I just love this idea of connecting with people through stories. We've been doing this since the beginning of time, right? We've been oral tradition. Stories are kind of what keeps us going as humans. It's part of the human experience to kind of hold this mirror up to us. So I, you know, this is a great outlet for me to be able to do that.
Holding a mirror up to the human experience. What a beautiful way to say that. Let's hear a small section of the exit strategy where Susan narrates the universal experience of heartbreak.
She drove along the beach for a mile before turning into the parking lot facing the waves. This spot had always lured her during her darkest moments. Not a picture-perfect California beach, but a place of isolation, with fog on good days and howling storms on the worst ones. She came here after Simon stole the leadership of her fund from her grasp, and 15 years ago, when she abandoned her first job, when her boss, Grant, tried to force himself on her. The weather was more horrid than in Half Moon Bay. Even the surfers skipped this storm. She parked in front of the wall and lowered her head to the steering wheel while the wind threw sand against the sides of her SUV. Beyond sheets of rain on the windshield, dark waves crashed on the beach. She'd always thought a trauma like this, discovering your loved one was not who you believed, would hurt in your heart, but it didn't. Instead, a hole gaped at the bottom of her stomach, as if someone had taken acid and carved it away until nothing remained but emptiness. She closed her eyes and let herself imagine walking out into those waves, avoiding all the pain of the coming months. For the first time, she empathized with the thousands who stood near here on the edge of the Golden Gate, faced the skyline of San Francisco, and vanquished their problems with one poetic dive. She wouldn't do it, of course. As Pops used to say, she was built stronger than average. Also, his justification for why he found it acceptable to send away an 11-year-old. She'd always believed that little phrase, embedded in her psyche, helped her source the motivation to fight others' biases, to prove she and other women were worthy of being included. Now it also assured her of something new. No matter how the meeting with Todd went when it happened, she refused to allow him to steal her self-respect.
Now let's hear from Susan on what the hardest part is for her as an audiobook narrator.
The hardest part is, as an actor, whether I'm working behind the mic or whether I'm on stage, there's kind of this two parts to it where you're kind of letting go and really connecting with the characters, with the story. But there's also part of you plugged into this technical aspect of like, is my voice consistent with that character? Was that a weird noise my voice made? You know, am I too loud now? Am I too soft? And so kind of finding that balance where you are not getting so in your head about the technical, or you're so in touch with the character that you're not actually, it becomes too internal, and then you're not sharing it with your audience.
It's kind of like the difference between writing and editing. When you're writing, you want to be creative and you don't want to let your other side of your brain, your analytical side, get in the way when you're trying to create. And then there's a point where you're being like analytical and you're saying, did this work and what should it be and how do I improve it? So it seems like a very similar analogy. I love how you refer to it as the storytelling aspect of it. So let's hear an example of that storytelling aspect. Here's a clip from the first chapter where Rin, the main character in the exit strategy, realizes the woman she's about to meet across the negotiating table is in fact her husband's mistress.
Her fingers flipped to the section of the folder with management biographies. A photo of Carly Santos, BioLarge's co-founder and chief scientist, smiled next to a biography full of patents and achievements. Carly. Rin's skin prickled. Prickled like the moment you notice inconsistencies in a company's accounts, or at night when you cross the road to avoid the man with the neck tattoo, and he follows you. She studied the photo. Carly was a common enough name. There must be hundreds, thousands of women named Carly in the Bay Area. Big doe eyes stared at her with a warmth that never showed in her photos. Rin's steely pose in leadership shots had become an office joke, with the other partners pushing her to smile just this once. But grinning on demand wasn't how a woman got taken seriously in a world where testosterone dripped down the walls. Rin ran her finger along Carly's waves of chestnut brown hair and studied the dimples in her smile. Miss Santos was gorgeous in an unassuming, wouldn't steal your husband kind of way. This woman, this professional, couldn't be Todd's Carly. That would be ridiculous. Spanish soap opera, ridiculous. Trashy television, ridiculous. She leaned over her keyboard and searched for the file of texts downloaded from Todd's phone. She didn't regret hacking into his account. Not since yesterday afternoon when she'd listened to the impatient Valley Girl twang of the receptionist at his conference hotel. Again, I'm sorry, ma'am, to keep repeating myself, but no matter how many times you ask, I cannot arrange a surprise massage for a Mr. Runyon. Because he's not staying there? Like I said, I cannot disclose information about our guest, but I also cannot arrange the gift you're asking for. Rin rubbed her eyes, then pushed on her stomach, trying to still the slithers of every reaction she'd tailspun through since yesterday, starting with incredulity, then questioning her sanity, followed by checking his text and panic after she read the messages from Carly, as if the real Rin, the one with everything under control who understood how life worked, exited stage left at the exact second she learned Todd lied about where he stayed.
Soulmates have nothing on us,
he joked the night before he left after delivering her Nutella toast with a kiss while they worked together late at the dining table.
10 years and still best friends.
His fingertips caressed her shoulders, and that sunbeam of a smile snuck across his face.
The sex ain't all bad either.
He leaned over and closed her laptop in what had become a sign between them. No matter how hectic their work lives, they always made time for each other. She struggled not to reread his 5 reasons I miss my Carly Bear text on her computer while searching for his mistress's phone number. Perhaps if she studied their hundreds of messages, it might explain why he cheated. Because so far, nothing made sense. She and Todd were happy together, weren't we? The only reason she didn't call and yell at him not to bother coming home was she needed to see his face when she asked, why? She noted the phone number, 10 simple digits to identify the woman Todd had been screwing for at least 6 months based on their texts. The folder trembled in her hand as she located the tab with BioLarge Team's contact information. She was being irrational, and yet it felt as if the paper might melt onto her fingertips. She wiped her palms across her skirt. It couldn't possibly be the same phone number.
Next up, Susan and I chat on how she picks voices and more on the surprising similarities between narrating and writing.
I think there's so many similarities between writing and acting. I mean, it's you are creating characters, and that's what actors do, right?
So tell me more about that, because you put on different voices. And I noticed several times when you and I were going back and forth that you call it performing, not narrating. I actually noticed that little difference in wording. So like, how do you decide like what voices to do for different characters?
I read the book before I narrate it. So usually when I'm reading it beforehand, I get a really strong sense of the characters while I'm reading it. And I could kind of hear their voices in my head. Doesn't always come out of my mouth the way I want it to, but, you know, best laid plans. But I kind of have that in my head and hope to get that out. And one thing that I struggled with early on that I consistently work on is it's kind of going back to what I said before, but the technical versus, you know, just kind of letting go is just be true to the character and be true to the dialogue. And even if the voice isn't exactly the same on the next line, as long as it's true to the character, it's okay. Everyone will know. Because you could really get like, oh no, I'm, you know, half a note up higher on this than I was. So that's something that I work with a lot, is just kind of like, it's okay if it's not 100% perfect, as long as the characters are there consistently. Yeah.
So tell me about the process, because I suspect, like writing, that people hear the end product and they think that you just, you know, get a microphone, read the book, and send it over, and you're done. And I think very similar to writing, there's a lot that happens between the first attempt of reading the book and the thing that goes to the author and then the thing that gets published. Talk to me a little bit how that process works.
Yeah, I think people would be surprised how many hours go into a finished hour of audio. For me, when I get the book, I generally will ask the author or rights holder, you know, do you have any character notes? I like to know what their vision is for it and try and stay as consistent as possible to that. And then I read that with that, and I read the story with that in mind. And while I'm reading, if there's any words I'm unfamiliar with, I'll jot them down. I'll look up pronunciations, all those kind of fun logistical things. And then when I record, if I make a mistake, I go back and fix it in real time. And then I do my own editing and mastering. Some narrators will send it out to an editor, but I'm still kind of enjoying that part. And I'm kind of, I don't know, like these are my babies. I don't want to send out these files. Like, I want to tweak the timing and stuff. But so after I narrate it, I edit it for like spaces, weird noises that got in that I didn't realize. And then I listen to it again. So by the time I'm done, I have either read, recorded, or listened to the story about four or five times. So I'm really familiar with it.
And then the author also has a say, right? So then in this case, like, you send it to me and I listen to 12 hours of audio and I pick up on anything that's either incorrectly said or the pronunciation's not the way I expected it to be, or I mean, we had very few. I think in total you only had to fix like 10 or 20 things. I mean, it was tiny for 12 hours of audio. But I imagine sometimes that must be really hard, right? If the author has something in their head that they wanted it said a certain way. I mean, you nailed it as far as I was concerned, but like, does it ever get really tricky, that last stage?
It hasn't so far for me. It's good to kind of set the expectation up front. You know, you do like a first 15-minute sample, and it doesn't actually have to be the first 15 minutes of the book. So you could say, what characters do you want to hear? And you really work out what the author wants and try and get as close to that as possible. And I think a lot of authors realize that it's never going to sound exactly as they think it will in their head. And that's normal. I mean, it's the same with script writers and playwriters, right? You write something and then you hand over creative control, but that's where the audition process comes in. You want to get somebody who matches closest to you. So I've been pretty lucky that part hasn't been too tricky. The hardest part of that is the technical part, is getting those edits in and making it sound like it was part of the original recording.
I was amazed that you did that. Like, we had little pieces that were like tiny words and you managed to like change the sentence and you couldn't tell that it was ever any different. Like, that must be quite the skill.
Yeah, it's taken me a while to get to that point. And every so often, it still could be really hard. I mean, I listen to a ton of audiobooks and I could sometimes pick up too. I'll be like, oh, that's a pickup. That was not in the original recording.
And a pickup that's a term people might not be familiar with.
Changes at the end are called pickups. I don't know why, but yeah.
So before we wrap up by asking Susan's advice for writers and audio narrators, let's listen to one last snippet from her narration of the exit strategy. This is an example of Susan playing two different voices. In this early scene, Carly, a single mom, has just put her 5-year-old son to bed when she receives a call from Rin, her company's new investor. What Carly doesn't yet know is that Rin is married to her fiancé, Todd.
She answered the call this time. Might as well ask to be removed from their list or they'd keep bothering her. Carly? A woman's voice, almost inaudible. Yes, can you please take me off your list? No sound other than breathing and what sounded like the clink of ice on glass. Not a telemarketer, but a stalker? She rechecked the number, local area code, and moved her finger over the screen, preparing to hang up. "It's Rin. Rin Brennan." Carly froze in the middle of the living room, phone in one hand, wine glass in the other. This was a conversation she wanted, but not now. Not standing here in her pajama bottoms and ratty cardigan, with no clue what to ask this crazy woman. She'd assumed an opportunity to prepare before they talked.
Hello, Rin. We met today at Centra?
Yes, I remember. Carly heard the sharp edge of her own voice. Did Rin imagine she'd forget? Best let Rin do the talking. The sooner she spilled the problem, the better Carly might understand how to handle it, especially if it was a mistake.
What can I help you with?
How dare you come to my office? Rin's voice held the same ice-on-rage tone as this morning, but she overemphasized the start of each word, as if wanting to sound crisp.
And is there now?
Carly moved toward the patio door to the outside deck for a better signal.
I'm sorry?
I asked, is he there right now? Not a weak phone signal. Rin slurred her words. Her company's top investor had drunk dialed her? Carly stared at the phone, debating whether the correct etiquette was to hang up. If Rin had been drinking, she might not even remember this call by tomorrow. Instead, she kept her tone soothing.
Rin, I truly don't know what you're talking about. I think it would be best if we talk in the morning.
Stop playing dumb. I've seen your text. I'm asking if he's there.
Rin, I'm afraid you've got me mixed up with someone else.
Oh, fuck. You really don't know who I am, do you?
Don't know what?
Carly put a finger to where the skin on her forehead pulsed. A doozy of a headache verged on hitting her hard. That I'm Todd's wife.
Carly shook her head as if her ears were suddenly submerged. Her pulse surged, even as her brain slotted the pieces into place and reassured her. It had indeed been a mistake. For whatever reason, Rin confused Carly's Todd with her own husband. Carly's fiancé was Todd Runyon, not Todd Brennan.
Rin, you've got the wrong person. I'm sorry about whatever's happening with your husband, but my Todd isn't married. I mean, his wife died many years ago.
A dog barked somewhere in Carly's apartment complex, quieted, then started again. She glanced at the screen to see if Rin had hung up, but she was still there. Rin had to be wrong. Todd couldn't hide an entire other relationship. He didn't wear a wedding ring, and even if he took one off, there were no tan lines on his fingers. Some nights he stayed here. He couldn't stay over if he had a wife at home. And married men cheated, but they didn't get engaged. Although if anyone could make a monumental mistake about a man, she'd be that person.
Last question for you here before we wrap up, which is advice. Do you have any advice for writers? Let's start with writers who are looking to produce their audiobook. Any advice you would give to people who are maybe doing it, like me, for the first time?
I would say crowdsource other authors who have done it and find what's going to work best from a distribution standpoint. That's not really my end, so I don't know too much, but I know there are tons of ways to distribute. You know, you went through Findaway, there's ACX, there's a whole bunch of ways out there that you could distribute your book. So I would crowdsource on social media and, you know, listen to the auditions and again, be willing to give up some creative control and just make sure that you are setting your intentions clear from the beginning, because that's how things get kind of wonky at the end if there's a miscommunication.
What about someone who wants to get into audio narrating for the first time, who's thinking this might be a career for them? Like, if you rewind yourself to when you were starting out, what advice would you give past you?
I would say don't dive in head first like I did. Take time to really do your research. There's tons of information out there. I mean, even just the ACX website has tons of articles and information for narrators, for authors too. So that's a good resource for either end. There are groups on Facebook that will give you some advice on how to get started, coaches, and listen to a ton of audiobooks. That's been my biggest help. Know what people are doing in the industry. Know what works, what doesn't work. Listen to it for fun, but listen to it with an ear towards the craft itself.
Isn't that interesting how much it reflects the writer world of, you know, our big advice to writers is read a lot, because that'll help you understand what works. So same logic. I love it. If anyone has questions for me about how to pick, you know, a narrator or the process I went through or why I went with Findaway, feel free to ask me. I mean, for me, just to give you the short version, I wanted to be an open distribution because I really cared about the audiobook being available to libraries. And that was going to be easier for me with Findaway than if I'd gone with ACX. And so that was the main driver for me in going that path. This has been fun. And thank you again for narrating the exit strategy. I am so happy with how it turned out. Really, it was such a joy listening to it and hearing it narrated, like hearing the words the way a reader might have heard them, as opposed to the way I thought they were. And it's fun because, like, once you put this in the world, you don't own that thing anymore. It becomes the reader's thing, right? It's like with any book, right? Everybody reads from their own experience. And so this for me was just a joy to hear someone else kind of living my story, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I love that. And what a great book. I hope people pick it up.
Oh,
audio, ebook, it's a fantastic story. It's very topical right now. I love that the two main characters are female. It's really a testament to the strength of friendship and I don't know. I was really proud to get to narrate it.
So thank you. Well, thanks for doing this interview with me. And here's hoping it's a fun book and people enjoy it as an audio.
This is Lainey Cameron wrapping us up. If these snippets got you interested, you can find the audiobook for my now 5-time award-winning women's fiction novel, The Exit Strategy, on Amazon, Audible, audiobooks.com, Google, Apple Audiobooks, and my personal favorite, Libro.fm, where you can choose which indie bookstore gets a share of the profits from your audiobook purchase or subscription. This was a special episode, and I look forward to joining you again for another great book interview on a new release coming this weekend from a women's fiction author I admire.